drive-through Insta stores, but she preferred the little deli on the corner of West 78th, despite, or perhaps because of the fact that it was owned and run by Francois, a rude, snake-eyed refugee who'd fled to America after the Social Reform Army had overthrown the French government some 40 years before. He hated America and Americans, and the SRA had been dispatched within 6 months of the coup, but Francois remained, bitching and complaining behind the counter of the 78th Street Deli, where he enjoyed dispensing insults and political absurdities. Eve called him Frank to annoy him, and dropped in at least once a week to see what scheme he'd devised to try to short-credit her. Her mind on the candy bar, she stepped through the automatic door. It had no more than begun to whisper shut behind her when instinct kicked in. The man standing at the counter had his back to her, his heavy hooded jacket masking all but his size, and that was impressive. 6'5", she estimated. Easily 250. She didn't need to see Francois's thin, terrified face to know there was trouble. She could smell it, as ripe and sour as the vegetable hash that was today's special. In the seconds it took the door to click shut, she'd considered and rejected the idea of drawing her weapon. "Over here, bitch, now!" The man turned. Eve saw he had the pale gold complexion of a multiracial heritage and the eyes of a very desperate man. Even as she filed the description, she looked at the small round object he held in his hand. The homemade explosive device was worry enough. The fact that it shook as the hand that held it trembled with nerves was a great deal worse. Homemade boomers were notoriously unstable. The idiot was likely to kill all of them by sweating too freely. She shot Francois a quick warning look. If he called her lieutenant, they were all going to be meat very quickly. Keeping her hands in plain sight, she crossed to the counter. "I don't want any trouble," she said, letting her voice tremble as nervously as the thief's hand. "Please, I got kids at home." "Shut up, just shut up! Down on the floor, down on the fucking floor!" Eve knelt, slipping a hand under her jacket where the weapon waited. "All of it," the man ordered, gesturing with the deadly little ball. "I want all of it. Cash, credit, tokens, make it fast." "It's been a slow day," Francois whined. "You must understand, business is not what it was. You Americans, you want to eat this?" the man invited, shoving the explosive in Francois' face. "No, no!" Panicked, Francois punched in the security code with his shaking fingers. As the till opened, Eve saw the thief glance at the money inside, then up at the camera that was busily recording the entire transaction. She saw it in his face. He knew his image was locked there, and that all the money in New York wouldn't erase it. The explosive would, tossed carelessly over his shoulder as he raced out to the street to be swallowed in traffic. She sucked in a breath, like a diver going under. She came up hard, under his arm. The solid jolt had the device flying free. Screams, curses, prayers. She caught it in her fingertips. A high fly, shagged with two men out and the bases loaded. Even as she closed her hand around it, the thief swung out. It was the back of his hand, rather than a fist, and Eve considered herself lucky. She saw stars as she hit a stand of soy chips, but she held on to the homemade boomer. "Wrong hand, goddammit, wrong hand," she had time to think, as the stand collapsed under her. She tried to use her left to free her weapon, but the 250 pounds of fury and desperation fell on her. "Hit the alarm, you asshole!" she shouted as Francois stood like a statue with his mouth opening and closing. "Hit the fucking alarm!" Then she grunted as the blow to her ribs stole her breath. This time, he'd used his fist. He was weeping now, scratching and clawing up her arm in an attempt to reach the explosive. "I need the money. I got to have it. I'll kill you. I'll kill you all." She managed to bring her knee up. The age-old defense bought her a few seconds, but lacked the power to debilitate. She saw stars again as her head smacked sharply into the side of a counter. Dozens of the candy bars she'd craved rained down on her. "You son of a bitch. You son of a bitch," she heard herself saying it over and over as she landed three hard short arm blows to his face. Blood spurting from his nose, he grabbed her arm. And she knew it was going to break. Knew she would feel that sharp, sweet pain, hear the thin crack as bone fractured. But just as she drew in breath to scream, as her vision began to gray with agony, his weight was off her. The ball still cupped in her hand, she rolled over onto her haunches, struggling to breathe and fighting the need to retch. From that position, she saw the shiny black shoes that always said, "Beat Cop." "Book him." She coughed once, painfully. Attempted robbery, armed, carrying an explosive, assault. She'd have liked to have added, assaulting an officer and resisting arrest, but as she hadn't identified herself, she'd be skirting the line. "You all right, ma'am? Want the MTs?" She didn't want the Meditex. She wanted a fucking candy bar. "Lieutenant," she corrected, pushing herself up and reaching for her ID. She noted that the perp was in restraints, and that one of the two cops had been wise enough to use his stunner to take the fight out of him. "We need a safe box, quick." She watched both cops pale as they saw what she held in her hand. "This little boomer's had quite a ride. Let's get it neutralized." "Sir." The first cop was out of the store in a flash. In the 90 seconds it took him to return with the black box used for transporting and deactivating explosives, no one spoke. They hardly breathed. "Book him," Eve repeated. The moment the explosive was contained, her stomach muscles began to tremble. "I'll transmit my report. You guys with 123rd? "You bet, Lieutenant." "Good job." She reached down, favoring her injured arm, and chose a galaxy bar that hadn't been flattened by the wrestling match. "I'm going home."
"You didn't pay for that!" Francois shouted after her. "Fuck you, Frank!" she shouted back, and kept going.
The incident put her behind schedule. By the time she reached Rourke's mansion, it was 7:10. She'd used over-the-counter medication to ease the pain in her arm and shoulder. If it wasn't better in a couple of days, she knew she'd have to go in for an exam. She hated doctors. She parked the car and spent a moment studying Rourke's house. Fortress, more like, she thought. Its four stories towered over the frosted trees of Central Park. It was one of the old buildings, close to 200 years old, built of actual stone, if her eyes didn't deceive her. There was lots of glass and lights burning gold behind the windows. There was also a security gate, behind which evergreen shrubs and elegant trees were artistically arranged. Even more impressive than the magnificence of architecture and landscaping was the quiet. She heard no city noises here. No traffic snarls, no pedestrian chaos. Even the sky overhead was subtly different than the one she was accustomed to, farther downtown. Here, you could actually see stars, rather than the glint and gleam of transports. "Nice life, if you can get it," she mused, and started her car again. She approached the gate, prepared to identify herself. She saw the tiny red eye of a scanner blink, then hold steady. The gates opened soundlessly. So, he'd programmed her in, she thought, unsure if she was amused or uneasy. She went through the gate, up the short drive, and left her car at the base of granite steps. A butler opened the door for her. She'd never actually seen a butler outside of old videos, but this one didn't disappoint the fantasy. He was silver-haired, implacably eyed, and dressed in a dark suit and ruthlessly knotted old-fashioned tie. "Lieutenant Dallas." There was an accent, a faint one that sounded British and Slavic at once. "I have an appointment with Rourke. He's expecting you." He ushered her into a wide, towering hallway that looked more like the entrance to a museum than a home. There was a chandelier of star-shaped glass dripping light onto a glossy wood floor that was graced by a boldly patterned rug in shades of red and teal. A stairway curved away to the left with a carved griffin for its newel post. There were paintings on the walls, the kind she had once seen on a school field trip to the Met. French impressionists from what century she couldn't quite recall. The revisited period that had come into being in the early 21st century complemented them with their pastoral scenes and gloriously muted colors. No holograms or living sculpture, just paint and canvas. "May I take your coat?" She brought herself back and thought she caught a flicker of smug condescension in those inscrutable eyes. Eve shrugged out of her jacket, watched him take the leather somewhat gingerly between his manicured fingers. Hell, she'd gotten most of the blood off it. "This way, Lieutenant Dallas. If you wouldn't mind waiting in the parlor, Rourke is detained on a trans-Pacific call." "No problem." The museum quality continued there. A fire was burning sedately. A fire out of genuine logs in a hearth carved from lapis and malachite. Two lamps burned with light like colored gems. The twin sofas had curved backs and lush upholstery that echoed the jewel tones of the room in sapphire. The furniture was wood, polished to an almost painful gloss. Here and there, objets d'art were arranged. Sculptures, bowls, faceted glass. Her boots clicked over wood, then muffled over carpet. "Would you like a refreshment, Lieutenant?" She glanced back, saw with amusement that he continued to hold her jacket between his fingers like a soiled rag. "Sure. What have you got, Mr. Somerset, Lieutenant? Simply Somerset. And I'm sure we can provide you with whatever suits your taste." "She's fond of coffee," Rourke said from the doorway. "But I think she'd like to try the Moncar 49. Somerset's eyes flickered again, with horror, Eve thought. "The 49, sir?" "That's right. Thank you, Somerset." "Yes, sir." Dangling the jacket, he exited, stiff-spined. "Sorry I kept you waiting," Rourke began. Then his eyes narrowed, darkened. "No problem," Eve said as he crossed to her. "I was just..." "Hey!" She jerked her chin as his hand cupped it, but his fingers held firm, turning her left cheek to the light. "Your face is bruised." His voice was cool on the statement, icily so. His eyes, as they flicked over the injury, betrayed nothing. But his fingers were warm, tensed, and jolted something in her gut. "A scuffle over a candy bar," she said with a shrug. His eyes met hers, held just an instant longer than comfortable. "Who won?" "I did. It's a mistake to come between me and food. I'll keep that in mind." He released her, dipped the hand that had touched her into his pocket, because he wanted to touch her again. It worried him that he wanted very much to stroke away the bruise that marred her cheek. "I think you'll approve of tonight's menu." "Menu? I didn't come here to eat, Rourke. I came here to look over your collection." "You'll do both." He turned when Somerset brought in a tray that held an uncorked bottle of wine the color of ripened wheat and two crystal glasses. "The 49, sir." "Thank you. I'll pour out." He spoke to Eve as he did so. "I thought this vintage would suit you. What it lacks in subtlety..." He turned back, offering her a glass. "It makes up for in sensuality." He tapped his glass against hers so the crystal sang, then watched as she sipped. "God, what a face," he thought. "All those angles and expressions, all that emotion and control. Just now, she was fighting off, showing both surprise and pleasure as the taste of the wine settled on her tongue. He was looking forward to the moment when the taste of her settled on his. "You approve?" he asked. "It's good." It was the equivalent of sipping gold, she thought. "I'm glad. The Montcar was my first venture into wineries. Shall we sit and enjoy the fire?" It was tempting. She could almost see herself sitting there, legs angled toward the fragrant heat, sipping wine as the jeweled light danced. "This isn't a social call, Rourke. It's a murder investigation." "Then you can investigate me over dinner." He took her arm, lifting a brow as she stiffened. I'd think a woman who'd fight for a candy bar would appreciate a 2-inch fillet, medium rare. Steak? She struggled not to drool. Real steak? From a cow? A smile curved his lips. Just flown in from Montana. The steak, not the cow. When she continued to hesitate, he tilted his head. Come now, Lieutenant. I doubt if a little red meat will clog your considerable investigative skills. Someone tried to bribe me the other day, she muttered, thinking of Charles Monroe in his black silk robe. With? Nothing as interesting as steak. She aimed one long, level look. If the evidence points in your direction, Rourke, I'm still bringing you down. I'd expect nothing less. Let's eat. He led her into the dining room. More crystal, more gleaming wood, yet another shimmering fire, this time cupped in rose-veined marble. A woman in a black suit served them appetizers of shrimp swimming in creamy sauce. The wine was brought in, their glasses topped off. Eve, who rarely gave a thought to her appearance, wished she'd worn something more suitable to the occasion than jeans and a sweater. So, how'd you get rich? She asked him. Various ways. He liked to watch her eat, he discovered. There was a single-mindedness to it. Name one. Desire, he said, and let the word hum between them. Not good enough. She picked up her wine again, meeting his eyes straight on. Most people want to be rich. They don't want it enough. To fight for it. Take risks for it. But you did. I did. Being poor is uncomfortable. I like comfort. He offered her a roll from a silver bowl as their salads were served, crisp greens tossed with delicate herbs. We're not so different, Eve. Yeah, right. You wanted to be a cop enough to fight for it, to take risks for it. You find the breaking of laws uncomfortable. I make money, you make justice. Neither is a simple matter. He waited a moment. Do you know what Sharon de Blas wanted? Her fork hesitated, then pierced a tender shoot of endive that had been plucked only an hour before. What do you think she wanted? Power. Sex is often a way to gain it. She had enough money to be comfortable, but she wanted more, because money is also power. She wanted power over her clients, over herself, and most of all, she wanted power over her family. Eve set her fork down. In the firelight, the dancing glow of candle and crystal, he looked dangerous. Not because a woman would fear him, she thought, but because she would desire him. Shadows played in his eyes, making them unreadable. That's quite an analysis of a woman you claim you hardly knew. It doesn't take long to form an opinion, particularly if that person is obvious. She didn't have your depth, Eve, your control, or your rather enviable focus. We're not talking about me. No, she didn't want him to talk about her, or to look at her in quite that way. Your opinion is that she was hungry for power. Hungry enough to be killed before she could take too big a bite? An interesting theory. The question would be, too big a bite of what? Or whom? The same silent servant cleared the salads, brought in oversized china plates heavy with sizzling meat and thin golden slices of grilled potatoes. Eve waited until they were alone again, then cut into her steak. When a man accumulates a great deal of money, possessions, and status, he then has a great deal to lose. Now we're speaking of me. Another interesting theory. He sat there, his eyes interested, yet still amused. She threatened me with some sort of blackmail, and rather than pay or dismiss her as ridiculous, I killed her. Did I sleep with her first? You tell me, Eve said evenly. It would fit the scenario, considering her choice of profession. There may be a blackout on the press on this particular case, but it takes little deductive power to conclude sex reared its head.
I had her, then I shot her, if one subscribes to the theory. He took a bite of steak, chewed, swallowed. There's a problem, however.
Which is?
I have what you might consider an old-fashioned quirk. I dislike brutalizing women, in any form.
It's old-fashioned, in that it would be more apt to say you dislike brutalizing people, in any form.
He moved those elegant shoulders. As I say, it's a quirk. I find it distasteful to look at you and watch the candlelight shift over a bruise on your face.
He surprised her by reaching out, running a finger down the mark, very gently.
I believe I would have found it even more distasteful to kill Sharon de Blas.
He dropped his hand and went back to his meal.
Though I have, occasionally, been known to do what is distasteful to me, when necessary.
How was your dinner?
It's fine.
The room, the light, the food was all more than fine. It was like sitting in another world, in another time.
Who the hell are you, Rourke?
He smiled and topped off their glasses.
You're the cop.
Figure it out.
She would, she promised herself. By God, she would before it was done.
What other theories do you have about Sharon de Blas?
None to speak of. She liked excitement and risk and didn't flinch from causing those who loved her embarrassment. Yet she was...
intrigued. Eve leaned closer.
What? Go ahead. Finish.
Pitiable.
He said in a tone that made Eve believe he meant no more and no less than just that. There was something sad about her under all that bright, bright gloss. Her body was the only thing about herself she respected, so she used it to give pleasure and to cause pain.
And did she offer it to you?
Naturally. And assumed I'd accept the invitation.
Why didn't you?
I've already explained that. I can elaborate and add that I prefer a different type of bedmate, and that I prefer to make my own moves.
There was more, but he chose to keep it to himself.
Would you like more steak, Lieutenant?
She glanced down, saw that she'd all but eaten the pattern off the plate.
No, thanks.
Dessert.
She hated to turn it down, but she'd already indulged herself enough.
No, I want to look at your collection.
Then we'll save the coffee and dessert for later.
He rose, offered a hand. Eve merely frowned at it and pushed back from the table. Amused, Rourke gestured toward the doorway and led her back into the hall, up the curving stairs.
It's a lot of house for one guy.
Do you think so? I'm more of the opinion that your apartment is small for one woman.
When she stopped dead at the top of the stairs, he grinned.
Eve, you know I own the building. You'd have checked after I sent my little token.
You ought to have someone out to look at the plumbing, she told him. I can't keep the water hot in the shower for more than 10 minutes.
I'll make a note of it.
Next flight up.
I'm surprised you don't have elevators, she commented as they climbed again.
I do.
Just because I prefer the stairs doesn't mean the staff shouldn't have a choice.
And staff, she continued. I haven't seen one remote domestic in the place.
I have a few, but I prefer people to machines. Most of the time.
Here.
He used a palm scanner, coded in a key, then opened carved double doors. The sensors switched on the lights as they crossed the threshold. Whatever she'd been expecting, it hadn't been this.
It was a museum of weapons. Guns, knives, swords, crossbows.
Armor was displayed, from medieval ages to the thin, impenetrable vests that were currently military issue. Chrome and steel and jeweled handles winked behind glass, shimmered on the walls. If the rest of the house seemed another world, perhaps a more civilized one than what she knew, this veered jarringly in the other direction. A celebration of violence.
Why?
Was all she could say.
It interests me. What humans have used to damage humans through history.
He crossed over, touching a wickedly toothed ball that hung from a chain. Knights farther back than Arthur carried these into jousts and battles. 1,000 years.
He pressed a series of buttons on a display cabinet and took out a sleek, palm-sized weapon, the preferred killing tool of 21st-century street gangs during the urban revolt. And we have something less cumbersome and equally lethal. Progression without progress. He put the weapon back, closed and secured the case. But you're interested in something newer than the first and older than the second. You said a 38 Smith & Wesson Model 10. It was a terrible room, she thought. Terrible and fascinating. She stared at him across it, realizing that the elegant violence suited him perfectly. It must have taken years to collect all of this. 15, he said, as he walked across the uncarpeted floor to another section. Nearly 16 now. I acquired my first handgun when I was 19, from the man who was aiming it at my head. He frowned. He hadn't meant to tell her that. I guess he missed, Eve commented, as she joined him. Fortunately, he was distracted by my foot in his crotch. It was a 9mm Beretta semi-automatic he'd smuggled out of Germany. He thought to use it to relieve me of the cargo I was delivering to him and save the transportation fee. In the end, I had the fee, the cargo, and the Beretta. And so Rourke Industries was born out of his poor judgment. The one you're interested in, he added, pointing as the wall display opened. You'll want to take it, I imagine, to see if it's been fired recently. Check for prints and so forth. She nodded slowly while her mind worked. Only 4 people knew the murder weapon had been left at the scene. Herself, Feeney, the commander, and the killer. Rourke was either innocent or very, very clever. She wondered if he could be both. I appreciate your consideration. She took an evidence seal out of her shoulder bag and reached for the weapon that matched the one already in police possession. It took her only a heartbeat to realize it wasn't the one Rourke had pointed to. Her eyes slid to his, held. Oh, he was watching her all right, carefully. Though she let her hand hesitate now over her selection, she thought they understood each other. Which? This. He tapped the display just under the 38. Once she'd sealed it and slipped it into her bag, he closed the glass. It's not loaded, of course, but I do have ammo if you'd like to take a sample. Thanks. Your cooperation will be noted in my report. Will it? He smiled, took a box out of a drawer, and offered it. What else will be noted, Lieutenant? Whatever is applicable. She added the box of ammo to her bag, took out a notebook and punched in her ID number, the date, and a description of everything she'd taken. Your receipt. She offered him the slip after the notebook spit it out. These will be returned to you as quickly as possible unless they're called into evidence. You'll be notified one way or the other. He tucked the paper into his pocket, fingered what else he'd tucked there. The music room's in the next wing. We can have coffee and brandy there. I doubt we'd share the same taste in music, Rourke. You might be surprised, he murmured, at what we share. He touched her cheek again, this time sliding his hand around until it cupped the back of her neck. At what we will share. She went rigid and lifted a hand to shove his arm away. He simply closed his fingers over her wrist. She could have had him flat on his back in a heartbeat, so she told herself. Still, she only stood there, the breath backing up in her lungs and her pulse throbbing hard and thick. He wasn't smiling now. You're not a coward, Eve. He said it softly when his lips were an inch from hers. The kiss hovered there, a breath away until the hand she'd levered against his arm changed its grip, and she moved into him. She didn't think. If she had, even for an instant, she would have known she was breaking all the rules, but she'd wanted to see, wanted to know, wanted to feel. His mouth was soft, more persuasive than possessive. His lips nibbled hers open so that he could slide his tongue over them, between them, to cloud her senses with flavor. Heat gathered like a fireball in her lungs even before he touched her, those clever hands molding over the snug denim over her hips, slipping seductively under her sweater to flesh. With a kind of edgy delight, she felt herself go damp. It was just the mouth, just that generous and tempting mouth he'd thought he'd wanted, but the moment he'd tasted it, he'd wanted all of her. She was pressed against him, that tough, angular body beginning to vibrate. Her small, firm breast weighed gloriously in his palm. He could hear the hum of passion that sounded in her throat, all but tasted as her mouth moved eagerly on his. He wanted to forget the patience and control he'd taught himself to live by and just ravage. Here. The violence of the need all but erupted inside him, here and now. He would have dragged her to the floor if she hadn't struggled back, pale and panting. "This isn't going to happen." "The hell it isn't," he shot back. The danger was shimmering around him now. She saw it as clearly as she saw the tools of violence and death surrounding them. There were men who negotiated when they wanted something. There were men who just took. Some of us aren't allowed to indulge ourselves. "Fuck the rules, Eve." He stepped toward her. If she had stepped back, he would have pursued, like any hunter after the prize. But she faced him squarely and shook her head. "I can't compromise a murder investigation because I'm physically attracted to a suspect. God damn it, I didn't kill her!" It was a shock to see his control snap, to hear the fury and frustration in his voice, to witness it wash vividly across his face. And it was terrifying to realize she believed him. And not be sure, not be absolutely certain if she believed because she needed to. "It's not as simple as taking your word for it. I have a job to do, a responsibility to the victim, to the system. I have to stay objective, and I..." "Can't," she realized. "Can't." They stared at each other as the communicator in her bag began to beep. Her hands weren't quite steady as she turned away, took the unit out. She recognized the code for the station on the display and entered her ID. After a deep breath, she answered the request for voice print verification. "Dallas, Lieutenant, Eve, no audio, please, display only." Rourke could just see her profile as she read the transmission. It was enough to measure the change in her eyes, the way they darkened, then went flat and cool. She put the communicator away, and when she turned back to him, there was very little of the woman who'd vibrated in his arms in the woman who faced him now. "I have to go. We'll be in touch about your property." "You do that very well," Rourke murmured. "Slide right into the cop's skin. And it fits you perfectly." "It better. Don't bother seeing me out. I can find my way." "Eve." She stopped at the doorway, looked back. There he was, a figure in black surrounded by eons of violence. Inside the cop's skin, the woman's heart stuttered. "We'll see each other again." She nodded. "Count on it." He let her go, knowing Somerset would slip out of some shadow to give her the leather jacket, bid her good night. Alone, Rourke took the gray fabric button from his pocket, the one he'd found on the floor of his limo, the one that had fallen from the jacket of that drab gray suit she'd worn the first time he'd seen her. Studying it, knowing he had no intention of giving it back to her, he felt like a fool. Chapter 6. A rookie was guarding the door to Lola Starr's apartment. Eve pegged him as such because he barely looked old enough to order a beer. His uniform looked as if it had been just lifted from the supply rack and from the faint green cast of his skin. A few months of working this neighborhood, and a cop stopped needing to puke at the sight of a corpse. Chemiheads, the street LCs, and just plain badasses like to wail on each other along these nasty blocks as much for entertainment as for business profits. From the smell that had greeted her outside, someone had died out there recently. Or the recycle trucks hadn't been through in the last week. "Officer." She paused, flashed her badge. He'd gone on alert the moment she'd stepped out of the pitiful excuse for an elevator. Instinct warned her, rightly enough, that without the quick ID, she'd have been treated to a stun from the weapon his shaky hand was gripping. "Sir?" His eyes were spooked and unwilling to settle on one spot. "Give me the status." "Sir?" he said again, and took a long, unsteady breath. "The landlord flagged down my unit, said there was a dead woman in the apartment." "And is there?" Her gaze flicked down to the name pinned over his breast pocket. "Officer Prosky?"
"Yes, sir, she's..."
He swallowed hard, and Eve could see the horror flit over his face again. "And how did you determine the subject is terminated, Prosky? You take her pulse?" A flush, no healthier than the green hue, tinted his cheeks.
"No, sir. I followed procedure. Preserved crime scene, notified headquarters, visual confirmation of termination. The scene is uncorrupted."
"The landlord went in?" All of this she could learn later, but she could see that he was steadying as she forced him to go over the steps.
"No, sir. He says not. After a complaint by one of the victim's clients who had an appointment for 9 p.m., the landlord checked the apartment. He unlocked the door and saw her. It's only one room, Lieutenant Dallas, and she's... Well, you see her as soon as you open the door. Following the discovery, the landlord, in a state of panic, went down to the street and flagged down my patrol unit. I immediately accompanied him back to the scene, made visual confirmation of suspicious death, and reported in."
"Have you left your post, officer? However briefly?" His eyes settled finally. Met hers.
"No, sir, Lieutenant. I thought I'd have to for a minute. It's my first, and I had some trouble maintaining."
"Looks like you maintain fine to me, Prosky." Out of the crime bag she'd brought up with her, she took out the protective spray, used it. "Make the calls to forensics and the ME. The room needs to be swept, and she'll need to be bagged and tagged."
"Yes, sir."
"Should I remain on post?" "Until the first team gets here. Then you can report in." She finished coating her boots, glanced up at him. "You married, Prosky?" she asked as she snapped a recorder to her shirt.
"No, sir. Sort of engaged, though."
"After you report in, go find your lady. The ones who go for the liquor don't last as long as the ones who have a nice warm body to lose it in." "Where do I find the landlord?" she asked, and turned the knob on the unsecured door.
"He's down in 1A.
"Then tell him to stay put. I'll take his statement when I'm done here." She stepped inside, closed the door. Eve, no longer a rookie, didn't feel her stomach revolt at the sight of the body, the torn flesh, or the blood-splattered child's toys. But her heart ached. Then came the anger, a sharp red spear of it when she spotted the antique weapon cradled in the arms of a teddy bear. She was just a kid. It was 7 a.m. Eve hadn't been home. She'd caught 1 hour's rough and restless sleep at her office desk between computer searches and reports. Without a Code 5 attached to Lola Star, Eve was free to access the databanks of the International Resource Center on Criminal Activity. So far, IRCCA had come up empty on matches. Now, pale with fatigue, jittery with the false energy of false caffeine, she faced Feeney. She was a pro, Dallas. Her fucking license was barely 3 months old. There were dolls on her bed. There was Kool-Aid in her kitchen. She couldn't get past it. All those silly, girlish things she'd had to paw through while the victim's pitiful body lay on the cheap, fussy pillows and dolls. Enraged, Eve slapped one of the official photos onto her desk. She looks like she should have been leading cheers at the high school. Instead, she's running tricks and collecting pictures of fancy apartments and fancier clothes. You figure she knew what she was getting into? I don't figure she thought she'd end up dead, Feeney said evenly. You want to debate the sex codes, Dallas? No. Wearily, she looked down at her hard copy again. No, but it bums me, Feeney. A kid like this. You know better than that, Dallas. Yeah, I know better. She forced herself to snap back. Autopsy should be in this morning, but my prelim puts her dead for 24 hours minimum at discovery. You've identified the weapon? SIG 210. A real Rolls-Royce of handguns. About 1980. Swiss import. Silenced. Those old-timey silencers were only good for a couple, three shots. He'd have needed it because the victim's place wasn't soundproofed like the Blass's. And he didn't phone it in, which tells me he didn't want her found as quickly. Had to get himself someplace else, she mused. Thoughtful, she picked up a small square of paper, officially sealed. 2 of 6. 1 a week, she said softly. Jesus Christ, Feeney, he hasn't given us much time. I'm running her logs, trick book. She had a new client scheduled, 8 o'clock, night before last. If your prelim checks, he's our guy. Feeney smiled thinly. John Smith. That's older than the murder weapon. She rubbed her hands hard over her face. IRCCA is bound to spit our boy out from that tag. They're still running the data, Feeney muttered. He was protective, even sentimental about the IRCCA. They're not going to find squat. We got us a time traveler, Feeney. He snorted. Yeah, a real Jules Verne. We've got a 20th century crime, she said through her hands. The weapons, the excessive violence, the hand-printed note left on scene. So maybe our killer is some sort of historian or buff anyway. Somebody who wishes things were what they used to be. Lots of people think things would be better some other way. That's why the world's lousy with theme parks. Thinking, she dropped her hands. IRCCA isn't going to help us get into this guy's head. It still takes a human mind to play that game. What's he doing, Feeney? Why is he doing it? He's killing LCs. Hookers have always been easy targets. Back to Jack the Ripper, right? It's a vulnerable job. Even now, with all the screening, we still get clients knocking LCs around, killing them. Doesn't happen much, Feeney mused. Sometimes, with the S&M trade, you get a party that gets too enthusiastic. Most LCs are safer than teachers. They still run a risk. The oldest profession with the oldest crime. But things have changed. Some things. People don't kill with guns as a rule anymore. Too expensive. Too hard to come by. Sex isn't the strong motivator it used to be. Too cheap. Too easy to come by. We have different methods of investigation and a whole new batch of motives. When you brush all that away, the one fact is that people still terminate people. Keep digging, Feeney. I've got people to talk to. What you need, some sleep, kid. Let him sleep, Eve muttered. Let that bastard sleep. Steeling herself, she turned to her telelink. It was time to contact the victim's parents. By the time Eve walked into the sumptuous foyer of Rourke's Midtown office, she'd been up for more than 32 hours. She'd gotten through the misery of having to tell two shocked, weeping parents that their only daughter was dead. She'd stared at her monitor until the data swam in front of her eyes. Her follow-up interview with Lola's landlord had been its own adventure. Since the man had had time to recover, he'd spent 30 minutes whining about the unpleasant publicity and the possibility of a drop-off in rentals. So much, Eve thought, for human empathy. Rourke Industries, New York, was very much what she'd expected. Slick, shiny, sleek. The building itself spread 150 stories into the Manhattan sky. It was an ebony lance, glossy as wet stone, ringed by transport tubes and diamond-bright skyways. No tacky glider grills on this corner, she mused. No street hawkers with their hot pocket PCs dodging security on their colorful airboards. Out-of-doors vending was off-limits on this bite of Fifth. The zoning made things quieter, if a little less adventuresome. Inside, the main lobby took up a full city block, boasting 3 Tony restaurants, a high-priced boutique, a handful of specialty shops, and a small theater that played art films. The white floor tiles were a full yard square and gleamed like the moon. Clear glass elevators zipped busily up and down. People glide zigzagged left and right, while disembodied voices guided visitors to various points of interest, or, if there was business to be conducted, the proper office. For those who wanted to wander about on their own, there were more than a dozen moving maps. Eve marched to a monitor and was politely offered assistance. "Rourke," she said, annoyed that his name hadn't been listed on the main directory.
"I'm sorry."
The computer's voice was that overly mannered tone that was meant to be soothing and instead grated on Eve's already raw nerves.
"I'm not at liberty to access that information."
"Rourke," Eve repeated, holding up her badge for the computer to scan. She waited impatiently as the computer hummed, undoubtedly checking and verifying her ID, notifying the man himself.
"Please proceed to the East Wing, Lieutenant Dallas. You will be met."
"Right." Eve turned down a corridor, past a marble run that held a forest of snowy white impatiens.
"Lieutenant."
A woman in a killer red suit and hair as white as the impatiens smiled coolly.
"Come with me, please."
The woman slipped a thin security card into a slot, laid her palm against a sheet of black glass for a handprint. The wall slid open, revealing a private elevator. Eve stepped inside with her and was unsurprised when her escort requested the top floor. Eve had been certain Rourke would be satisfied with nothing but the top. Her guide was silent on the ride up and exuded a discreet whiff of sensible scent that matched her sensible shoes and neat, sleek coif. Eve secretly admired women who put themselves together, top to toe, with such seeming effortlessness. Faced with such quiet magnificence, she tugged self-consciously at her worn leather jacket and wondered if it was time she actually spent money on a haircut rather than hacking away at it herself. Before she could decide on such earth-shattering matters, the doors whooshed open into a silent, white-carpeted foyer the size of a small home. There were lush green plants, real plants, ficus, palm, what appeared to be a dogwood flowering off-season. There was a sharp, spicy scent from a bank of dianthus, blooming in shades of rose and vivid purple. The garden surrounded a comfortable waiting area of mauve sofas and glossy wood tables, lamps that were surely solid brass with jeweled-colored shades. In the center of this was a circular workstation, equipped as efficiently as a cockpit with monitors and keyboards, gauges and telelinks. Two men and a woman worked at it busily, with a seamless ballet of competence in motion. She was led past them into a glass-sided breezeway. A peek down, and she could see Manhattan. There was music piped in she didn't recognize as Mozart. For Eve, music began sometime after her 10th birthday. The woman in the killer suit paused again, flashed her cool, perfect smile, then spoke into a hidden speaker.
"Lieutenant Dallas, sir."
"Send her in, Caro."
"Thank you."
Again, Caro pressed her palm to a slick black glass.
"Go right in, Lieutenant,"
she invited as a panel slid open. "Thanks." Out of curiosity, Eve watched her walk away, wondering how anyone could stride so gracefully on 3-inch heels. She walked into Rourke's office. It was, as she expected, as impressive as the rest of his New York headquarters. Despite the soaring 3-sided view of New York, the lofty ceiling with its pinprick lights, the vibrant tones of topaz and emerald in the thickly cushioned furnishings, it was the man behind the ebony slab desk that dominated. What in hell was it about him? Eve thought again, as Rourke rose and slanted a smile at her.
"Lieutenant Dallas," he said in that faint and fascinating Irish lilt. "A pleasure, as always."
"You might not think so when I'm finished." He lifted a brow. "Why don't you come the rest of the way in and get started? Then we'll see."
"Coffee?"
"Don't try to distract me, Rourke." She walked closer. Then, to satisfy her curiosity, she took a brief turn around the room. It was as big as a heliport, with all the amenities of a first-class hotel. Automated service bar, a padded relaxation chair complete with VR and mood settings, an oversized wall screen, currently blank. To the left, there was a full bath, including whirl tub and drying tube. All the standard office equipment of the highest high-tech was built in. Rourke watched her with a bland expression. He admired the way she moved, the way those cool, quick eyes took in everything. "Would you like a tour, Eve?"
"No."
"How do you work with all this..." Using both hands, she gestured widely at the treated glass walls. "Open. I don't like being closed in."
"Are you going to sit or prowl?"
"I'm going to stand. I have some questions to ask you, Rourke. You're entitled to have counsel present."
"Am I under arrest?"
"Not at the moment."
"Then we'll save the lawyers until I am.
Ask." Though she kept her eyes level on his, she knew where his hands were, tucked casually in the pockets of his slacks. Hands revealed emotions.
"Night before last," she said. "Between the hours of 8 and 10 p.m., can you verify your whereabouts?"
"I believe I was here until shortly after 8. With a steady hand, he touched his desk log. "I shut down my monitor at 8:17. I left the building, drove home."
"Drove?" she interrupted. "Or were driven?"
"Drove. I keep a car here. I don't believe in keeping my employees waiting on my whims."
"Damn democratic of you."
And, she thought, damned inconvenient. She'd wanted him to have an alibi. "And then?" "I poured myself a brandy, had a shower, changed. I had a late supper with a friend."
"How late, and what friend?"
"I believe I arrived at about 10. I like to be prompt. At Madeleine Montmartre's townhouse."
Eve had a quick vision of a curvy blonde with a sultry mouth and almond eyes.
"Madeleine Montmartre, the actress?"
"Yes."
"I believe we had squab, if that's helpful."
She ignored the sarcasm.
"No one can verify your movements between 8:17 and 10 p.m.
"One of the staff might have noticed, but then I pay them well and they're likely to say what I tell them to say."
His voice took on an edge.
"There's been another murder?"
"Lola Starr, licensed companion. Certain details will be released to the media within the hour, and certain details will not."
"Do you own a silencer, Rourke?"
His expression didn't change.
"Several."
"You look exhausted, Eve. Have you been up all night?"
"Goes with the job. Do you own a Swiss handgun, SIG 210, circa 1980?
"I acquired one about 6 weeks ago."
"Sit down.
Were you acquainted with Lola Starr?"
Reaching into her briefcase, she pulled out a photo she'd found in Lola's apartment. The pretty elfin girl beamed out, full of sassy fun.
Rourke lowered his gaze to it as it landed on his desk. His eyes flickered. This time, his voice was tinged with something Eve thought sounded like pity.
"She isn't old enough to be licensed."
"She turned 18 4 months ago. Applied on her birthday."
"She didn't have time to change her mind, did she?"
His eyes lifted to Eve's, and yes, it was pity.
"I didn't know her. I don't use prostitutes or children."
He picked up the photo, skirted the desk, and offered it back to Eve.
"Sit down."
"Have you ever..." "God damn it, sit down!" In sudden fury, he took her shoulders, pushed her into a chair. Her case tipped, spilling out photos of Lola that had nothing to do with sassy fun. She might have reached them first. Her reflexes were as good as his. Perhaps she wanted him to see them. Perhaps she needed him to. Crouching, Rourke picked up a photo taken at the scene. He stared at it.
"Christ Jesus," he said softly. "You believe I'm capable of this?"
"My beliefs aren't the issue. Investigating..." She broke off when his eyes whipped to hers.
"You believe I'm capable of this?"
he repeated in an undertone that cut like a blade.
"No,
but I have a job to do."
"Your job sucks."
She took the photos back, stored them, From time to time. How do you sleep at night after looking at something like this?
She flinched. Though she recovered in a snap, he'd seen it. As intrigued as he was by her instinctive and emotional reaction, he was sorry he'd caused it.
By knowing I'll take down the bastard who did it.
Get out of my way. He stayed where he was, laid a hand on her rigid arm. A man in my position has to read people quickly and accurately, Eve. I'm reading you as someone close to the edge.
I said, get out of my way.
He rose, but shifting his grip on her arm, pulled her to her feet. He was still in her way.
He'll do it again, Rourke said quietly. And it's eating at you, wondering when and where and who.
Don't analyze me. We've got a whole department of shrinks on the payroll for that.
Why haven't you been to see one? You've been slipping through loopholes to avoid testing.
Her eyes narrowed. He smiled, but there was no amusement in it.
I have connections, Lieutenant. You were due in testing several days ago. Standard department procedure after a justifiable termination. One you executed the night Sharon was killed. Keep out of my business, she said furiously, and fuck your connections.
What are you afraid of?
What are you afraid they'll find if they get a look inside of that head of yours, that heart of yours?
I'm not afraid of anything.
She jerked her arm free, but he merely laid his hand on her cheek. A gesture so unexpected, so gentle, her stomach quivered.
Let me help you.
Something nearly spilled out, as the photos had, but this time her reflexes kept it tucked away.
I'm handling it.
She turned away. You can pick up your property any time after 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Eve.
She kept her eyes focused on the doorway, kept walking.
What? I want to see you tonight.
No. He was tempted, very tempted, to lunge after her. Instead, he stayed where he was.
I can help you with the case.
Cautious, she stopped, turned back. If he hadn't been experiencing an uncomfortable twist of sexual frustration, he might have laughed aloud at the combination of suspicion and derision in her eyes.
How?
I know people Sharon knew. As he spoke, he saw the derision alter to interest, but the suspicion remained.
It doesn't take a long mental leap to realize you'll be looking for a connection between Sharon and the girl whose photos you're carrying.
I'll see if I can find one.
Information from a suspect doesn't carry much weight in an investigation, but, she added before he could speak,
you can let me know.
He smiled after all.
Is it any wonder I want you naked and in bed?
I'll let you know, Lieutenant.
And walked back behind the desk. In the meantime,
get some sleep.
When the door closed behind her, the smile went out of his eyes. For a long moment he sat in silence. Fingering the button he carried in his pocket, he engaged his private, secure line. He didn't want this call on his log. Chapter 7. Eve stepped up to the peep screen at Charles Monroe's door and started to announce herself when it slid open. He was in black tie, a cashmere cape swung negligently over his shoulders, offset by the cream of a silk scarf. His smile was every bit as well turned out as his wardrobe.
Lieutenant Dallas, how lovely to see you again.
His eyes, full of compliments she knew she didn't deserve, skimmed over her.
And how unfortunate, I'm just on my way out.
I won't keep you long.
She stepped forward. He stepped back.
A couple of questions, Mr. Monroe, here informally or formally at the station with your representative or counsel.
His well-shaped brows shot up.
I see. I thought we'd progressed beyond that.
Very well, Lieutenant, ask away.
He let the door slide shut again.
We'll keep it informal.
Your whereabouts night before last, between the hours of 8 and 11?
Night before last?
He slipped a diary out of his pocket, keyed it in.
Ah, yes. I picked up a client at 7:30 for an 8 o'clock curtain at the Grand Theater. They're doing a reprise of Ibsen. Depressing stuff. We sat third row, center.
It ended just before 11, and we had a late supper, catered, here. I was engaged with her until 3 a.m. His smile flashed as he tucked the diary away again. Does that clear me? If your client